And we're going to start this next hour with a classic from Marvin Gaye. It's What's Going On. Father,
there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
Was Marvin Gaye and What's Going On. And our guest this morning on the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that make and break our lives, is Phoebe Brown. Phoebe, it's good to have you here.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
And so you picked that song. And that song's been actually picked. That's probably the most frequently picked song of the first 6-7 months of my show. Mm-hmm. And why did you pick it?
Well, I picked it because it was a time in my life that I was just excited with it. But I didn't know that it would still have relevance till today. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, a mm-hmm. lot of what he talks about in that song, we are still dealing with today.
And that is, yeah. And we're still trying to sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. Yeah. That's true. So, Phoebe, who are you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first, I'd like to wish my son a happy birthday.
So you're a mother.
Yeah. I picked this day because it was his birthday, and I wanted to remember to say, I thought this would be a nice way to say, happy birthday. I love you, Abdul.
Good.
Yeah. Well,
good.
I'm a mother of two, mm-hmm. Three. I've been living in Ithaca for now for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Harlem. I'm an African-American woman who's very proud of that. And, you know, I came to Ithaca to change some things that was happening in my life. And it's been a good move. Mm-hmm. And what can I say about it? I work for Cayuga Medical Center. Mm-hmm. I'm also on the board of Green Star Community Project. I'm also on the Green Star Community Project Planning Committee.
Right.
I'm also a part of the Building Bridges. Mm-hmm. I'm also just started maybe about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I started a group at my house called Women Healing Mind, Body, and Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a lot of stuff in the community.
Yeah.
And I'm also getting ready to start a group. Me and a friend is thinking about doing another little project, but that's in the future.
Right. And I guess that question can be taken a whole bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I was would encourage, you sound like a person who really enjoys being in people's lives,
mm-hmm.
and having them in your life.
Yes.
And sharing a lot, getting to know each other a lot, and working together. And what is your role at Cayuga Medical Center?
I am the community outreach liaison.
And in that capacity, who do you relate to?
I don't understand.
What does the community liaison do?
My position is to link the community to Cayuga Medical Center, mm-hmm. to try to find out what in the community is their needs, and mm-hmm. how Cayuga Medical Center can best help them to get to what it is that they need in their lives.
Right.
Health, support, education, prevention. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I work with the Cayuga Center for Healthy Living.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good, good. Now, you said you came, you grew up in Harlem.
Yes.
Without betraying anything, what era did you grow up in Harlem?
I grew up in the 50s.
Yeah. And you said you got out of Harlem because you needed to change a few things in your life.
Yeah. I was struggling with addiction. I had a friend who lived in Ithaca who invited me up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought a geographical change would help, but it didn't. I didn't know they had drugs here, but I found out.
Well, it's called the geographical cure, and it doesn't work, right?
It doesn't work. It didn't work. But, however, I've been able to stay clean now for over 16 years, almost 16 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so happy about it. This month actually will be 16 years. I share that not because I'm not embarrassed about it. And I'm hoping that anyone who's struggling with addiction know that there is help.
Right. And also, the worst thing to do when you're struggling is to make yourself more isolated by not being able to talk.
About it, yeah.
And one of the things that many people don't realize about Ithaca is that there is a huge, what I would call, recovery migrant community here.
Yeah, it
is. People who have come here to recover, and then they discover that they have to do a lot more than just move.
Right.
In order to recover. And for you know, on an earlier show, we were talking about how the population has doubled here in the last 60 years, and no place else in upstate New York has it done that. And part of that doubling is a recovery migrant community, people who are looking for a better, safer place to live. And Ithaca's not alone. Places like Williamsport in Pennsylvania and Lewisburg and these small cities are places where people come, people of color, people, white folks, if it fits and they can find work and they can hang on there, it gets them out of the core city. Makes a change.
Not that I miss Harlem every day, I would love to live there again. However, I keep saying if I go back to Harlem, but I'm finding now when I go to Harlem, it feels like I'm in Ithaca because of gentrification. But I mean, you know, I came here, but I came here and I've been here for 20 years, but I don't regret for a minute growing up in Harlem. Right. It was the best thing that could have ever happened in my life. I learned so much. I loved growing up there.
Well, what is a lesson or two that you took from that childhood that you wouldn't have gotten anywhere else?
Being happy who I am. Being very proud to be an African-American woman.
Being in the majority.
Maybe that's it. I never looked at it like that. Being in the majority, so I didn't feel, I never felt less than. We were proud of who we were. We was a community that worked together and took care of each other. And it was a lot of education at that time. We had the civil rights movement happening. We had the Black Nation of Islam movement.
Right.
We had the Panther Party movement. We had the Revitalization Corps, which was another group who we put together bus rides to go to the suburbs to invite them to us. So it was a really beautiful movement
at
that time.
Right, and movements in political actions from many different points of view, many different conflicting points of view, but people were in some sense mobilized.
Very mobilized.
And that makes me think of the song we just listened to. One of the things that you came from a 95-99% African American neighborhood to Tompkins County, and we are 80% white, not Hispanic, and African Americans are less than 5% of the county population. And you are a visible minority, and it's hard. I mean, that's what you. I mean, that's one of the things you miss. But you didn't. But you had the grounding to come here. What do you think you bring here, because of that grounding, that other people aren't really aware of here? That we need to learn here.
What I bring here. When I got here, I felt like I was in a time warp. But what I bring is not what I bring, is what I have received here. I have gotten education that I could not have gotten at any Ivy League college. I've learned some of my beliefs are not true. One, and I thought all white people was rich. And I learned not true at all. I say that in joke, but what I have learned is that we all have, maybe not, we don't all look alike. But we all share the same emotions.
Right. I grew up in rural poverty, and I had to learn that not all people who lived in cities were rich.
Right? See?
Because that was a big issue for me.
So, and I think what I bring here is something that I don't know if you get it anywhere else, but one thing about New Yorkers, we go-getters. I'm not saying that about other people aren't.
It's a particularly pronounced value.
We're go-getters. We're not going to take no for an answer. And that might be who I am because of how I grew up in the environment that I grew up in and all the movements that I've seen happening. Yeah. So that allowed me to know that, like, if it don't feel good, talk about it.
Right. And you have the power to do something about it. You can't necessarily control it,
No.
But you have some power. You're not powerless. Yeah, yeah, and that's a beautiful lesson. Yeah. Now, you came with some more music, and I want to cut to music. Shall we play the Wigs and Lashes?
Sure.
And do you want to introduce that now, or do you want to say something afterwards?
Wigs and Lashes is by The Miracles, without Smokey. I've always liked this song. For some reason, it makes me think about a lot of times... I don't know. Just listen to it and tell me what you think.
Okay. We just made a mistake. I do not have it. I thought I had it, but I do not have it. So... we are going to cut to something else.
Okay.
These mistakes do happen on live radio, and I searched and I thought I had got it, but I didn't. So
no, I searched too, and it's hard to get.
Yeah. So let's go to Anyone Who Had a Love.
Yes.
That's that. And that's a Dionne Warwick song. And Anyone Who Had a Heart, I guess I should say. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I picked it up a couple of different ways when I was searching for it. So here it goes.
Anyone who ever loved could look at me and know that I love you. Anyone who ever dreamed could look at me and know I dream of you. Knowing I love you so. Anyone who had a heart would take me in his arms and love me too. You couldn't really have a heart and hurt me like you. Go away, I always say, well, this time it's goodbye, dear. Loving you the way I do, I take you back. Without you, I die, dear. Knowing I love you so.
WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca, 91.9 in Watkins Glen, and WRFI.org, streaming over the web. And our guest in this hour is Phoebe Brown, and that song was Dionne Warwick's Anyone Who Had a Heart. And I You're a person of a big heart. I mean, yeah. I can tell that. What are some of the losses that you've had to face, and some of the things you've had to recover from that you know? Because you sound like a person who's not afraid of telling it like it has been.
Yeah. I've had quite a few losses, and this is a touchy topic for me because I know I've healed from it, but I still feel pain with it. I lost two sisters, a brother. I lost my mother, my father, my children's father, and a host of friends. And when you're growing up, you never think that you will lose. I thought I'd still have them today in my life.
Right.
And I miss them every day.
Right.
But I try to be the person that I know they would want me to be. Excuse me. But the biggest lesson from it all was to be grateful to have had them in my life than to never have had them at all.
Right.
And so, you know, and it, this happened real close.
Many of them died in the same time.
Sort of close years.
Right.
A few years apart.
How old were you when they died? I mean, how many years ago did they die?
It's been some time. My youngest son, Lester, is 32. So it's like 30-something years ago for one of my sisters. But the funny thing is I can't remember any of the dates.
Right.
I can't remember any of the years. I know they're gone.
Right.
And what I do know is that it took me to a really dark place for a long time. Well, for some years, and I believe that's one of the reasons I continue to use, also because I suffer from a disease of addiction, but it took me to a place that was very sad, but I'm not ungrateful for it, because it also allowed me to grow and be the great woman that I am today.
Right, and I guess what was the sadness for you? What was the way that the sadness gripped you or held you?
The sadness was to believe, I mean, you don't really, when you're young, you don't really think about losing people in your life. You think about, my thoughts were always me and my sisters hanging out together when we get older, looking out the window on 7th Avenue, talking about people. My children's father, I just knew we would be together or co-parent forever. My mother, I just thought that this would be time, you know. It was shocking to me because you don't believe it could happen to you, and it's the in a lot of ways that it happened to. Some of them were pretty tragic death, and so when you say the question again was.
You know, what have you had to face, and how have you recovered from it? And you were telling me a bit about. I asked you more about how did the sadness hit you, and I'm just going to tell a little story. Where I come from, 1 out of 20 of my peers wouldn't make it to the age of 20.
Mm-hmm.
So in my small rural area, that meant that of the people 5 years older to 5 years younger than me, 20 of them would die.
Yeah.
I just knew because the place was in economic free fall, I just had to get out. And everything I did in my life was to get a scholarship to college, to get out. Getting out didn't solve the problem.
No.
Because you have these dead friends and these lost lives and opportunities that still sit in your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And you can try to achieve even more as a way, which is a success is a form of addiction too.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't work out because it never can work out because you're driven by something. And that's what I learned. And to finally just accept the sadness and to mourn the loss of these people, that some of whom I'd cared for, some of them I knew well, but not. But just to allow loss to have a place in my life was a big lesson.
Well, the lesson for me was to, and I think what helped me more than anything was becoming a part of the 12-step program. So I was able to see things differently, because it's all about attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors, and learning to be grateful. You know, once I learned to be grateful, because death is a part of life, and the way it happened is always not what you can accept. But I think for me, the biggest piece was learning to be grateful for having that love in my life when I had it in my life. To have never known it at all would have been a loss.
Right.
You know, so so being in recovery helped me to get to a better place with it all. Yeah.
Right. But, and I mean, the saying is, regardless of the hell that you're living through, if you can find one thing to be grateful for, it shines just a teeny bit of light in that darkness.
Yeah.
And that can make the difference on a given day.
Makes a big difference.
You were saying before that it wasn't what you brought here, but it's what you found here. And so you could go to college. And so what is it that you discovered here?
What I discovered here was I built pretty much a family here, because I didn't have a family here. And the funny thing is, my friend who invited me to come to Ithaca left the very next year.
Oh, wow.
And
you stayed on.
And I stayed on, despite thinking, there's times I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. But I stayed and I healed. And what I've learned here is that it is not always the way it appears. There's some things in Ithaca that is not, I'm not happy about. But what I've found here is a lot of people are willing to work on it. A lot of people, a lot of communities, different communities. I just, another thing I found here was I'm grateful for it, because it brought me to a place of peace. Maybe this is the place I found recovery. So, you know, it couldn't have been a prettier place to get to become the woman that I've always wanted to be. But it's just, so I can't put it in words. And it's funny, because I can use words, you know, but and the education that I got here with all the major colleges that they have here was the education of unity, learning, changing some of my beliefs about other people, different people from me. So I don't know if I answered that properly.
No, you did. I want to come back if I can recover the moment. And it kind of take us in a slightly different direction, but I think it'll be a useful one. We can be a driven place. And people are willing to work on things. But if you do that with kind of an immature approach, you're only willing to work as long as you see progress on your terms. And a more mature approach is that we just always have to work on things. We may or may not see progress, and we can't predict what action will bring progress, because we don't necessarily know. But we keep on working, because it's good to keep on working on things and discover. What we discover might be better than what we thought we might achieve, which seems to be what happened to you. The move here has been better beyond your imagination. And I think that instills gratitude.
It does.
And for us to work on things where we feel like we have a grudging demand for justice, that we know what it is. A woman, Karen, in Detroit, she told me, we don't go out to do justice. We go out to discover justice. We have to know each other well enough to know what would be justice in each one of our lives to do it. And I hear that kind of pragmatic optimism.
Yeah.
In what you're saying.
I was laughing at myself the other day, because I'm very, very active and I was trying to figure why everything affects me in a way of, that's not fear, that is fear. That's not fear, that is fear. And I guess as I'm a Libra, I'm always balancing the scales. I have been able to come to a place of that I think of something I heard Maya Angelou say at she spoke out in Cortland at the college, and she said that, like, if you are sitting around and people are discussing something that's not right and you're not responding to it, then you're just as bad as they are. So I don't know if I'm answering your question. But what I've learned and what I've done, and I've been doing it since I was young, is being active in my community and tackling what I think is unfair or trying to help to make changes. As I grow, my the way I do it is different.
Right, right. And I was in a community a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about the issue of when you see something that's wrong, it can make you feel like you have to go in and heroically rescue it, or it can make you ashamed and it shuts you down.
Mm-hmm.
But really, what's usually the most important thing is just, is this what I'm seeing here? Mm-hmm. That doesn't really seem right to me.
Yeah.
How could it be different? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have the edge that you can fix it, and it doesn't silence you into shame.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I hear you trying to describe there by being an active member of the community. You're not going to fix it. That's addiction.
I'm not going to fix it, but I'm not going to stand by and watch it not be addressed.
Right, right. Right.
I will, and I'm pretty, I've learned a lot. You know, I was, when I first came to Ithaca, I was pretty brass. I was pretty, and a friend of mine, Olivia Armstrong, helped me to, like, Phoebe, they can't hear you if you're coming in that voice.
Coming that strong.
You know, you have to learn to tone it down, or you have to learn to let them hear you. And how does somebody hear you? They hear you when you're speaking with from the truth and with passion and you know. So I've grown a lot in this town,
good
city.
Good. I want to cut to your next song, which was a Billy Stewart piece.
Yeah.
I Do Love You.
Okay.
Okay. We're gonna play that right now.
So I don't want you to go.
was Billy Stewart and I Do Love You, and you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 91.9 in Watkins Glen, 88.1 in Ithaca, and WRFI.org, streaming over the web. And our guest this morning is Phoebe Brown. And Phoebe, you brought that song, I Do Love You. Is there an association with that song?
Yes, it reminds me. I was in, they call it middle school up here. We call it the junior high school.
Well, it's, yeah, and slightly different. But junior high used to be just like 7th and 8th grade.
Yeah, no, 7th, 8th, and 9th.
And 9th for you. Yeah, okay, yeah.
And I don't know, for some reason, I just fell in love with that song. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I always remember it, no matter what group does it, because the Escorts did a version of it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I love that song. It reminds me of a good time in my life.
Right. And so junior high was a good time for you?
It was a really good time for me. Yeah. Which is funny, because it was a good time and it was a scary time.
Right. And what I'm hearing as you talk about it is that this is, you know, kind of like Phoebe saying, I do love you to the universe,
yeah,
to the world.
Yeah, kind of like that.
And not
that.
Just about one person.
Oh, no.
No.
It's not about one person. Yeah. I'm not.
Yeah. No. But that's where kids trip up.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, one of the first tasks in life is to figure out how to love this place you've come to live.
Right.
And then, how do you begin to work on specific people?
Yeah.
But if you have that optimism, mm-hmm. it's neat.
Because I fell in love with that song. I was about maybe 13 years old, and I don't remember, but I don't think I even had a boyfriend at the time.
Uh-huh.
I just liked the words of the music.
Yeah. Let me just, I'm, you know, how have you, you've talked about some of your changes, and some of the things that you've had to let go, past thoughts. How do you kind of keep, a critical eye? Because you can't have lived through the kind of tough times that you have and not know what it means to be critical and to go sour, you know, with that kind of negativity. But also, how do you know how to keep it alive, because that kind of precision is useful.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you keep that alive and keep it in balance with your generous spirit?
The critical eye is a part of my character, I mm-hmm. believe, you mm-hmm. know, a part of, like I said, that scale mm-hmm. of looking at what's right, what's not right.
Right.
How do I keep it balanced is remembering that, like, you know, and from learning through life, that always the way I see it through my lens is not the only way it needs to be seen.
Right.
That sometimes I have to sit back. Because if I go right at what I see and that's not right, and y'all have to do this and you better change that, then it might be like I might have jumped out too fast.
Right. And that's, it's the difference between you are a judge of all that's around you
mm-hmm.
versus you are the judge of all that's around
right.
you.
Right, and that's what I've learned not to be.
Yeah.
The judge.
Yeah, I've learned, here come the judge.
Here come the judge. No, that was a good one too. But I've learned not to be, and I guess that's part of the program I'm into. Mm-hmm. We learn not to be judgmental, and we learn to, like, you know, no one's no better, no less. We're all.
Right. And what a lot of people bristle at when they hear to not be judgmental is they assume it means kind of let anything go.
Mm-mm.
But it doesn't. It means take yourself out of the role of being the judge and just be aware of what you notice,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
what you judge with a little j.
Yeah. Neat.
What do you do to kind of put yourself into a right mind, a sense of balance, optimism? How do you kind of restore your strength and your optimism these days? What do you do? Practices, practically.
Oh, practically, I love to read. Mm-hmm. So I read, and reading always took me all over the world or mm-hmm. take me places so reading helps me. Talking to other people is a biggie for me. You know, I'm really a people person. I've gotten past being really scared of people to like, I like to, I mean, active doing things,
right,
seeing things happening, helping other people. Is that the question that keeps me kind of balanced?
So when do you notice that things are like going wrong and you need to take care of yourself? How do you notice when that something needs to?
I can feel it.
What do you feel?
I feel unsettled.
Uh-huh.
I feel unsettled, and I feel anxious.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to call my therapist or get to more meetings.
Well, so therapist or meetings is but does do you are there so is reading is part of your routine maintenance piece?
You know, that's kind of keeping you and meetings.
And meetings, and do you have some people do exercise or dance or walking or stuff? Or what?
I love to. I do a lot of walking.
Mm-hmm.
I do exercise. I'm in the building right now where Allen Health is, so I get to exercise. But I do a lot of walking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I walk pretty much everywhere. I don't know how to drive.
Yeah, so you're still from Harlem in a certain sense.
Yeah. I'm always going to be from Harlem.
Yeah.
in a Harlem state of mind all the time. So those things keep me balanced. Mm-hmm. And learning how to, when I think things are so bad for me, learning how to be available for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It brings me back into focus.
Right. And I guess one of the tough issues about that particular thing, I mean, I worked as a emergency room chaplain, mm-hmm, at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital during the height of the crack epidemic in the late 80s. And I deal with incessant crises pretty well. And that is just one traumatic crisis after another. It makes you feel alive.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, you have to be careful with that, because you need to be able to know how to go there without having to have the crisis to jazz you up or the other person to take care of. And what I'm just saying is that one of the side benefits of being involved in other people's lives is you live vicariously through their wonders and through their challenges. Mm-hmm. When does that work and when does it not work?
It doesn't work when I'm ignoring what is deeply going on with me. And then I've got programs to help me to get there. But what I have learned and what helps me a lot is, and I don't know if this is related to what you're, mm-hmm, asking me, is I don't stop. I can't stop. I need to do what I have to do for others and myself. And when I help others, that's doing for myself. So,
and you're honest about that.
Yeah. I'm really honest about that. What I do is I think of my ancestors. I think of the great people who had to keep doing what they had to do in order for us to get to a better place than where we are. And so that's how I look at life a lot of times. I think of Harriet Tubman. I think of my mother. I think of, so I can't get caught up in a lot. Like, I mean, I know it's been, I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off, but I keep looking at, like, if they could have gotten through that hard time, well, this is a piece of cake, because I have a lot of support.
Right.
I don't know if that answers your question.
It does, but I want to take the question, I want to take it one step further,
mm-hmm,
and that is, when you thought you were helping, have you been unhelpful? And how did you notice that?
I have not, this is not ego, but I get to my battles that I need, but I didn't say that correctly. I have not yet heard where you're not helping.
Right.
I mean, my timing might be wrong,
but I get the sense that you're listening to the feedback, so it never comes quite to that point.
You don't get to that point.
Right. And that's an important thing, I think, for the listener to hear. We're having this conversation, but you tend to pick up on stuff that's kind of going askew and address it before it goes too far askew.
And I learned that from life experience, because I know if I, because everything, a lot of times we bury it.
Right.
And I know that, so I try to like address it and get to it and share honestly and be me and accept me in every realm. And like, you know, I know how to say if I'm wrong or if somebody think I'm wrong. Because a lot of time I don't think I'm wrong.
Yeah.
No, I've been able to admit, you know, there's been things that's happened in my life that has allowed me to be humble. I've been humiliated in some areas, so I've learned to be humble. And I've learned the best place to be is being humble.
Right. And, you know, if you can be humiliated and walk out of that being humbled, then you've learned the lesson.
Oh, that's so true.
If you have been humiliated and you walk out of it ashamed, then somebody needs to step in.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody needs to step in. I think we are afraid of people's being humiliated, so sometimes we try to protect them from that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is, if it's something that they have done and we haven't kind of provoked them to, it's often the way you have to learn humility.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's it. That's the key. And learning the difference between it.
Right.
So I try not to say I'm humbled. I try to say, you know, I have been put in a hump to become humbled.
Yeah.
But it's what I learned, and I heard this somewhere, is that I've gained humility.
Right.
Because if I'm sitting around saying how humbled I am, usually
that's usually arrogance.
Thank you. But I've been humiliated, and it's taught me humility, and so I learned to like I'm grateful for everything.
Right.
And I learned how to get back to that place of gratefulness.
And if a person, if you see a person who seems to be humble, and you ask them, how was it that you were humiliated that you learned what you know? If they can't answer that question, then they may not have really experienced the lesson.
Yeah.
And that's a tough one.
Yeah.
I want to go to your next choice.
Yes.
Cowboys to Girls.
Oh,
the Intruders.
It is so...
And do you want to say anything now?
Or? You know what's so funny? Now that I'm listening to the records that I picked, it's a lot of love stuff. But really, I was very young. Well, not very young, but I was young at them songs, but I like them.
Yeah, good. Well, it's Cowboys to Girls by the Intruders.
Cowboys to Girls. To play shoot 'em up, bang, bang, baby. I remember when I chased the girls and beat 'em up. But I was young and didn't understand. But now I'm a grown up man. I know girls are made for kissing.
That was The Intruders and Cowboys Come to Girls. Cowboys to Girls. And I pulled away to check something out when I shouldn't have. Anyway, so our guest this morning on the Made of Clay Report is Phoebe Brown. And Phoebe, we had a really interesting exchange about, you know, having learned humility by having been appropriately humiliated or humbled. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes forget that humble comes from humility, which also is humiliation and associated with it. And you were, what experience recently has helped you to kind of relearn that lesson? It's not the first time.
No, it's not. I've had a few, and they have this saying, if you don't get the lesson, you'll keep being bumped to it.
Well, but there are some lessons that just we have to relearn because too much time passes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I've never looked at it that way. Well, a few years ago, I was working at Cayuga Medical Center. I still work for Cayuga Medical Center, but I was working as a switchboard operator, and something happened where I had gone to the laundry, and it really just rocked me. And
so you got reassigned.
I got reassigned to a different position.
Yeah.
And I could not figure out the laundry. Who, me? Why me? And I, you know, was feeling like I was cheated out of something. Mm-hmm. And it was appropriate how it happened. What I learned from it as I continued to work in the laundry was like, who am I? No, I looked around at the other people that worked in there. They were fun. We had a good time. They were really good and nice. And I said, but who am I to think that this is not where I need to be? And look at these people here working. Like, it's a job. And so it allowed me to be grateful that I had a job. It gave me the lessons of humility, because I felt humiliated at first. But it taught me the lessons of humility. Right. And so it's been an experience that I needed. Mm-hmm. I needed. It gave me a chance to get back to, like, then who, not that I don't, I do have skills that can put me in other places. And right. That's probably right. How why I'm working where I'm working.
Right.
But it was a beautiful experience for me that I would not have done on my own if the universe hadn't made it happen for me.
Right, right. When you're saying I don't deserve to be here, it's hard to realize that you're saying that you think other people might.
Yeah.
And that's not fair.
That's not fair.
That's the heart of inequality and injustice.
It taught me so much about, this is where my lesson came in on how all parts work together, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because a hospital could not run without the laundry. You know, you need every part to it. I don't know why I'm bringing that up today, because I'm in a really, you know, but I appreciate it. I appreciate that experience now.
Right. And you know, every show is different. And we touch on things that have meaning that we don't even necessarily know why. But that's where the conversation goes. And part of the purpose of this show is to engage in a personal conversation that's not private. Mm-hmm. It's not secret. I mean, this is going out over the airwaves.
Wow.
But to let people eavesdrop in ways where they can hear what other people are saying and not have to interject or to define, but they can just receive it as the kind of gift that I hope, that I sense we both intended to be.
Yeah.
And there's some wisdom in what you just had to say, and that's why it was important for me to take us back to spend a little more time with that humility question.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, what are your next, you know, what are you longing for? What are you kind of feeling moved to kind of focus on? Not in terms of projects, but just,
no.
You know, what is it, what is your care? Where is your heart or your passion leaning? What are you leaning into these days?
Well, what I've been thinking about lately, and maybe it's my age, this year I'll be 60. And I'm really thinking a lot about my legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, what will my children say when I leave here? And what will I leave them with?
Right.
And I can't leave them with no large sums of money. All I can leave them with is the value of life. Mm-hmm. valuing their own life and valuing other people's life. That and that's been you know, a little top of my head, but just being the best person that I can be.
Right.
Absolutely. Not and accepting my imperfections and continuing to do the next right thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know if, you know, I just, so that's been a biggie for me. You know, I, you know, I'm at that age where I look in the mirror sometime and I'm like, oh, okay, where did that come from?
Yeah, yeah,
But, you know, in all actuality, I think I am just beautiful.
Yeah.
Inside and out.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
If that means much to your question.
No, but I think the beauty piece, I think you accepted that years ago and you've had to grow into it.
Mm-hmm.
From what you just said, the piece that's new is the legacy piece.
Yeah.
Without being overly controlling, because, you know, some of this, I think about my legacy. Where I grew up, five generations of my ancestors are buried within 6 miles of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we was there a long time.
Long time.
And legacies can be like chains around your neck,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they can drag you down, unless they're what you choose and what you want. And what I would like to leave, and I learned this week, on this past Monday, my dad would have been 93 were he alive.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that the farmhouse that we grew up in was demolished.
Mm-hmm.
It was only 420 square feet, two bedrooms, a kitchen, a living room, a pantry, and an outhouse out back. Seven kids.
That's
in that space.
Yeah,
in that very small space. Mm-hmm. And it made me start thinking, because nothing lasts, you know. Nothing lasts, and the legacy is more how you send your wishes out to the world than anything you give. Although we can give some material things, and we can have an mm-hmm. effect that's helpful. I mean, money and goods are good things, but they're not the only thing, and
that's
sometimes
true. They're
not the most important thing. And so I've been thinking that same, wondering about that same sort of thing as I heard about the demolition of that house.
Yeah, it's so funny that you just shared. I grew up with seven siblings.
Uh-huh.
It was seven of us.
Where are you in the order?
I'm straight in the middle, uh-huh. right in the middle.
Right.
Three older, three younger. And it was three girls. And even with the three girls, I'm in the middle. So, yeah, I'm a piece of work. But I thought about what you just shared about seven people in two rooms. I mean, seven siblings.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had, in Harlem, we lived in what they call the railroad apartment.
Yep.
My brother is still there. Seven of us, but we had seven bedrooms.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was enough room. So it kind of made me think, sometimes you can't see the similarities.
Yeah.
You can see the differences.
Absolutely.
Clearly.
Absolutely.
But you can't see the similarities unless you talk.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important for me to see people getting together and talk.
Right. In some detail. It can't be generalities.
I started a woman's healing group, and I mean, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah.
Massive proportions.
Yeah. We had women from all different backgrounds, all different ages, all different, real diverse. Beautiful, beautiful.
You know, our hour is just about up, and I don't want to miss your last piece of music, which is From the Moments, not on the outside, which I have a funny feel. I haven't listened to the words of it recently, so I don't remember. But it seems like it's actually thematically headed where our conversation was headed.
Right.
Stay your night.
To WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest for this hour has been Phoebe Brown. Phoebe, you know, not on the outside, but on the inside, and that is where your heart, that's where your work comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's been good to get to know you a bit.
The same here.
May you have a wonderful day.
Yes, thank you for inviting me, and thank you everyone who took some time out to listen to me. Thanks.